good evening, everyone, and happy Thanksgiving. Here it is, Thanksgiving week. I'm recording this on Tuesday, the 25th of November, and it'll be broadcast on the shortwaves and at WWCR.com on Thursday evening, 8 p.m., 4.840 megacycles, and repeated Saturday morning at 8 a.m. on 7490, I think, 7.490 megahertz. You can tell I'm old when I say megacycles, the old-fashioned way to say it. But megahertz is the modern way. And welcome to the program. Here it is, the week of Thanksgiving. And we've got some little Thanksgiving news, a little humorous stuff. This is the time of year when two turkeys get pardoned by the president. And we have a little article. I'll just read some excerpts from it from the Gateway Pundit. Don't have a date on it, but I suspect it was either yesterday, the 24th, or Sunday, the 23rd of November. And it just says, U.S. tradition of the presidential turkey pardon, a historic ritual that marks the start of Thanksgiving. Every year on the eve of Thanksgiving, the United States celebrates one of the most curious and iconic traditions, the presidential turkey pardon. This symbolic act held at the White House has become a moment eagerly awaited by citizens and the media, officially kicking off the holiday season. Although records show the presidents received turkeys as far back as the 19th century, the modern version of the turkey pardon took shape in the 1980s, when the gesture began to be presented publicly as a formal act of clemency. Since then, each president participates in this annual ceremony in which a turkey, chosen specifically for its temperament, size, and presence, receives a symbolic pardon that saves it from becoming part of the Thanksgiving menu. During the event, the president typically delivers a speech with touches of humor, cultural references, and messages of national unity. It is also common for the president to express gratitude to American families, agricultural workers, and all those who contribute to supporting communities across the country. Well, now, as you can tell, that was written before the event actually took place this year. And as I'm recording this, I think it actually took place this very afternoon on November 25th. In fact, let me lean over here and get my little phone, and I'll see if I can give you a little bit of an update. Yep, from ABC News, November 25th at 1:10 p.m., the headline reads, Trump pardons Thanksgiving turkeys, Waddle and Gobble. That's their names, Waddle and Gobble, and jabs political rivals. I guess Mr. Trump couldn't avoid the temptation to get a little speech in about his politics. But the main part of it, I'll just read the beginning. Two very lucky birds won the White House lottery this year. A presidential pardon in a lifetime free from the Thanksgiving dinner table. Waddle and Gobble, who had their names chosen by the public online, were pardoned by President Donald Trump and First Lady Melania Trump Tuesday in the annual tradition that spares two Thanksgiving turkeys from becoming the centerpiece of a holiday meal. See how happy he is, Trump remarked of Gobble at the ceremony. Waddle was not present at the formal pardoning ceremony. And Trump said, Waddle, by the way, is missing in action. But that's okay. We can pretend Waddle is here. And it shows some pictures. Shows a couple pictures of the two turkeys on beds in a hotel room. And the caption says, the National Thanksgiving turkeys from North Carolina named Waddle and Gobble wait in their room a day ahead of that Thanksgiving holiday pardoning at the White House, at the Willard Intercontinental Hotel in Washington on November 24th, 2025. And I'll skip down. The two turkeys are provided by the White House, or to the White House, by the National Turkey Federation, who will take Gobble and Waddle back to North Carolina, where they will live under the care of the, I guess it's pronounced Prestige, P-R-E-S-T-A-G-E, Department of Poultry Science, at North Carolina State University in Raleigh. And Trump also took the opportunity to tout his administration's accomplishments, including the passage of his one big, beautiful bill, et cetera, et cetera. And I think those are the key things there. It has another picture that shows Waddle, who's just about as big as the little toddler in the picture, about half as tall as the human beings, the grown-ups. It's a turkey named Waddle, set to be pardoned by President Donald Trump, gets a tour of the press briefing room with the White House press secretary, Caroline Leavitt, and her son, Nico, at the White House in Washington, November 25th, 2025. Well, there are the headlines. That was from ABC News, dated today, as I record this, November 25th, 2025. All right. So, Thanksgiving week, and we do have a lot to be thankful for. I know I do. I certainly miss my wife, Elizabeth, but I've been trying to, well, to look on the good side of everything and be thankful for what I do have, which is a great deal. Well, now, speaking of President Trump, we've had a little controversy about this videotape that many of you have probably heard about on the TV, in which, well, let me read you the headline from Fox News. Democratic senator, this is in quotes, not aware, unquote, if Trump gave any illegal military orders amid video controversy. Michigan Democrat took part in a video urging service members to, quote, refuse illegal orders, unquote. This appeared in Fox News, was by Lindsey Cornick, November 24th, 2025. Michigan Democratic Senator Alyssa Slotkin said she was not aware that President Donald Trump issued any illegal orders to the military. This was said on ABC's program This Week. Senator Alyssa Slotkin, Democrat of Michigan, admitted she was not aware whether President Donald Trump had issued any illegal orders to the military following a backlash to a controversial video she posted last week. Slotkin faced questions during an interview Sunday on ABC's This Week about the recent reaction to a social media video she and five other Democratic lawmakers made encouraging service members to, quote, refuse illegal orders, unquote. Host of the program This Week, Martha Raddatz, asked Plotkin, do you believe President Trump has issued any illegal orders? And Plotkin responded, quote, to my knowledge, I am not aware of things that are illegal, but certainly there are some illegal gymnastics that are going on with these Caribbean strikes and everything related to Venezuela, unquote. Raddatz pressed for specific accusations. Now, get this. This is a program that tends to be somewhat left of center on ABC. Nevertheless, the hostess, Raddatz, pressed for specific accusations, and Slotkin pointed to her concerns over Trump deploying National Guard troops across the country. Plotkin said, quote, when you look at these videos coming out of places like Chicago, it makes me incredibly nervous that we are about to see people in law enforcement, people in uniform, people get nervous, get stressed, shoot at American citizens, unquote. And, of course, this is Lou speaking. I don't recall that has happened at all. So this is a Democratic politician who seemingly, and I can't say this for sure, I don't know her motives, but it seems like she's just trying to get at President Trump in any way they can. Back to the article. Here's a quote, and this is, again, the, what is she, a senator, I believe? Senator Alyssa Slotkin said, quote, it is a very, very stressful situation for these law enforcement officers and for the communities on the ground. So it was basically a warning to say if you are asked to do something, particularly against American citizens, you have the ability to go to your judge advocate general, JAG officer, and push back, the lawmaker said. Reddit followed up, noting that the original video, quote, does imply that the president is having illegal orders, which you have not seen, unquote. And Faulkner replied, I think for us it was just a statement widely, right? We say very quickly and to all the folks who come to us, this is the process. Go to your JAG officer, ask them for explanation for top cover for their view of things. We do that on a case-by-case basis. But we wanted to speak directly to the volumes of people who came to us on this, unquote. Fox News Digital reached out to the White House for comment, but did not immediately receive a response. When reached for comment, a spokesperson to Sorkin pointed to the senator's earlier remarks regarding her concerns about the, quote, legal gymnastics, unquote, surrounding Trump's actions on Venezuela. The video posted by Sorkin received backlash from conservative lawmakers and commentators who alleged it was an appeal to defy presidential orders. Trump responded on Truth Social on Saturday, calling the Democrats in the video traitors. Trump wrote, quote, it was sedition at the highest level, and sedition is a major crime. There can be no other interpretation of what they said, unquote. And those were Trump's words. Well, that ends the article, and again, that was from Fox News, November 24th. Democratic senator not aware if Trump gave any illegal military orders. Well, it seems to me, and I'm a layman, I was never in the military for medical reasons, seems to me that when you tell soldiers to disobey, you are breaking the chain of command, you are putting the country in jeopardy. And here she is talking about actions toward Venezuela. Well, to the best of my knowledge, no actions have been taken. There's been some verbal sparring going back and forth, but I don't recall any bombings of Venezuelan territory or any attacks on Venezuelan ships. So, to me, and I admit I don't know the whole story, I can't read her mind, but it seems to me that this is just a bunch of Democrats trying to undercut the president because he's a Republican and because they don't like him, frankly. Well, we'll see what develops out of this, but it seems to me to be a terrible precedent that she and those other Democrats are making. What would happen if in World War II soldiers had defied General Patton or General MacArthur or any other general or admiral? That would have devastated the American forces and made it impossible to have action in campaigns. What if they had disobeyed President Roosevelt? Or, and toward the end of the war, President Truman? Well, enough of that. Let's move on. Now, here's some interesting things in the world of astronomy. We don't get into astronomy very much, but here are two articles. One, more the typical factual scientific thing. The other, a little bit more speculative. And before I get to those, let me just say, if you'd like to write to us, to me, I say us, but of course it's now, it's just me. I know many of you miss my wife, Elizabeth, who was really the central part of this show for many years. And I hope I'm living up to what people expect. I hope that this show is in her honor. And I should mention that at least one person did write to me, actually emailed me, about getting a copy of our book, COVID and Coming Chaos. I still have a few left, and I'll get that one out if that person is listening. It's been a very busy week, but I will try to get that out in the mail tomorrow. And I would hope that it should be there by very early next week, with a holiday and all. So if you'd like a copy of that book, COVID and Coming Chaos, if you'd like to just make a contribution to keep the program on the air, that's certainly always welcome. They've kind of fallen off a little bit. I think everybody's very busy this time of year, and I certainly don't blame them for that. But if you'd like to make a contribution to the show, keep the show on the air, if you'd just like to tell me what you think of the show, good or bad, I like all comments. Like the good ones better, but the bad ones are constructed too. And I've taken some advice from some people in the last 6 months. So I don't think I don't read them, because I do. And you can just email me at Divided Kingdom Radio. You'll see a link there. If you go to DividedKingdomRadio.com, there'll be a way you can contact me by email. You can use snail mail. Just write to Lou Caverly, L-O-U-C-A-V, as in Victor, E-R-L-Y, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland. Now, you got me about the zip code. I think it's 21609. I'm going to have to look that up before the show's over. So hold off on that. I'll write it down with the idea in mind to pay attention to the show. That's embarrassing, but I don't get the chance to write to it very much myself. So, actually, I have some very good clippings here that a staunch listener from Massachusetts sent me, and yes, the zip code is 21609. Good fellow Joe up in Massachusetts sent us many good clippings. I wish I had time to use more of them. I'm going to use some of those a little later today. He has some very good information coming from the Boston Herald, a conservative Boston paper, and the New York Post. Some of each. But now, let's get to that comment I talked about. Here from USA Today, and I don't see a date for this, but I think it's in the last day or two. As I said, I'm recording this on November 25th. I suspect this is probably November 24th. The headline reads, "What is 3i Atlas?" That's its name for the comet. 3i Atlas. See all photos NASA has released of interstellar comet. Well, of course, I can't show you the photographs over the internet or shortwave. But if you go to this, I simply typed in interstellar comet and all kinds of, type that into the internet as a search, and I get all kinds of information. This looked like one of the better ones, so I grabbed this one. This is by Eric Lagata. And they do show beautiful photographs. A number of them on this website if you really want to take a good look. And they have some bullet points here to kind of summarize it. An interstellar comet named 3i Atlas, originating from outside our solar system, is passing through. Second bullet point, NASA recently released new images of the comet, which is being studied by astronomers worldwide. And third and last bullet point, the comet will make its closest approach to Earth on December 19th, 2025, passing at a safe distance of about 170 million miles away. Now, the main article says this. Just days ago, NASA dropped a batch of new images of a comet from an entirely different solar system that has for months been a source of public fascination and speculation. The object, named 3i/Atlas, is just the third comet to ever be discovered in Earth's cosmic neighborhood, originating from elsewhere in the universe. The interstellar interloper, which is likely way older than Earth, has been hurtling through our solar system at dizzying speeds and will one day soon be gone forever. And I'll just interject that unlike Halley's Comet and a number of others, this one doesn't have any elliptical orbit that comes back around the sun every so many years. Some have fairly short periods when they return. Others have much longer periods. And this one, however, has a different kind of orbit that comes toward the sun once, and as far as we can tell, never comes back again. And getting back to the article, that's why the world's astronomers and space agencies are racing to study an object composed of planetary material that formed from another star. Ground telescopes and instruments in space have been hard at work to glimpse 3I Atlas, making NASA's recent photo dump highly anticipated. The comet also hasn't been able to shake a persistent conspiracy theory that it could be an alien spaceship. We'll talk more about that in a few minutes. Did you miss seeing the new images? Here's what to know about 3I Atlas and a look at the photos NASA has just released to the interstellar comet TOFAR. Well, again, can't show you those over the radio or internet, but go to the any one of those websites that are current, and you can see those pictures. Just do a search. Type in on the search engine. You could type in 3I / Atlas, or if you forget that, just type in interstellar comet. So here's a little description of it. An object known as 3I Atlas made news in July when it was confirmed to be the third ever object discovered originating outside Earth's solar system. When it was spotted, 3I Atlas was whizzing at about 137,000 miles per hour, according to NASA. Observations of its speed and trajectory confirmed to astronomers that it formed in another star system and was ejected into interstellar space, the region between the stars. For potentially billions of years, the comet has drifted on a journey from the general direction of the constellation Sagittarius in the center of the Milky Way that recently brought it into our solar system. Unlike comets bound to the sun's gravity, 3I Atlas is traveling in a hyperbolic orbit that will eventually carry it out of the solar system and back into interstellar space. Astronomers don't yet know exactly how big 3I Atlas could be. Estimates range from a few hundred feet to a few miles across, according to the European Space Agency. And data returned from the Hubble Space Telescope allowed astronomers to estimate the size of the comet's solid icy nucleus is anywhere from about 1,400 feet to 3.5 miles wide. And let me skip down here. Those are the key facts. That's quite a difference in size from 1,400 feet to 3.5 miles. And the closing paragraphs say, the comet 3I Atlas, which is not a threat to Earth, is projected to pass within about 170 million miles of our planet on December 9th, or about twice the distance from Earth to the sun. All right, so those are some of the interesting facts about this comet. Now, that one was from USA Today. As I said, I don't have a date, but I suspect it was within the last 2 days. Now, from the New York Post on November 24th, now I'm recording this, as I said, on the 25th, so this is, as I am looking at it, it's yesterday. This is by Ben Cost. This says, 3I Atlas bizarre trajectory suggests it could be sending quote-unquote satellites to spy on Jupiter, according to Harvard scientists. Is the gas giant, that's Jupiter, about to have a close encounter of the 3I kind? Harvard scientist Avi Loeb, claims that 3I Atlas' bizarre trajectory could suggest that it's sending satellites, and that's in quotes, satellites to Jupiter to gather intel for an this is also in quotes, extraterrestrial civilization, unquote. Loeb told the Post, that's the New York Post, that the 3I Atlas could be using its time near Jupiter on March 16, 2026, to seed additional probes onto the gas giant. And Loeb says it comes exactly at the right distance from Jupiter for Jupiter's gravity to dominate. So if it wants to release some probes near Jupiter, that's where it needs to be. In a new blog on Medium, that's the name of the journal, I guess, the astrophysicist speculated Jupiter could have attracted Atlas because it was bigger than Earth and other neighboring planets in our solar system and therefore acted like an intergalactic signal beacon. Loeb said that for the comet to do recon on Jupiter, it would have to move into a region where Jupiter's gravity dominates over the Sun's, called the Hill Radius. That area contains stable spots where objects can hold position with very little fuel, making them prime real estate for advanced satellites. Volk found it to be an extraordinary coincidence, those are his words, extraordinary coincidence, that during the interstellar's entities closest approach to Jupiter on March 16th, it will be at a minimum distance of 53.445 million kilometers, or just over 33,000 million miles from Jupiter, based on calculations by NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. That's directly close to the Hill Radius, which is situated 53.502 million kilometers. Well, that is pretty close. That's me speaking now. Let me jump down a little bit. And Mr. Loeb, Avi Loeb, declared the non-gravitational acceleration introduced a small course correction of exactly the magnitude needed to bring the minimum distance of 3I Atlas from Jupiter to the value of Jupiter's Hill Radius. 3I Atlas would have missed the edge of the Hill sphere otherwise. And that's speculating that the comet may have executed an in-flight maneuver during its month-long passage near perihelion, the object's closest approach to the Sun. Well, interesting. It concludes, unfortunately, Atlas arrived at perihelion behind the Sun, that is the closest approach to the Sun, making it invisible to Earth's observatories and thereby preventing us from seeing whether the comet executed such a maneuver or if it released probes at that time. Well, interesting. There's some good pictures. There's a good diagram that shows the orbits of Jupiter, Earth, and the pathway of 3I Atlas. Well, if you like that kind of thing and you're interested in a little bit of I wouldn't call it science fiction. Maybe it's fact. I don't know. But that was from the New York Post by Ben Cost, November 24th, 2025. So it's very current. And the title was 3I Atlas Bizarre Trajectory Suggests It Could Be Sending Satellites to Spy on Jupiter. And those were the speculations of the Harvard scientist, Avi Loeb. I guess that's how you pronounce his name, A-V-I. Okay, back to a little more ordinary kind of thing. We have, let's see here. Let's take a break from the articles that I got off the internet. Look at a few of these things that are pretty interesting that a good friend in Massachusetts sent to us. Well, let's see now. I don't have time to read all of these, but I can at least give you some of the headlines and a few important paragraphs. Howie Carr is one of the regular columnists for the Boston Herald. This is his column on November 16th, not too long ago. Boston feds release a slew of shutdown headlines, while illegal immigrants well represented among them. Let's see. And Howie Carr is just stressing the fact that although they're always getting criticism by these left-wingers who say, oh, these are just people that they're being picked on by ICE. Well, here's the reality of some of them. This little section says, recent federal law enforcement cases highlighted by U.S. Attorney Leah Foley. All right, one of them, four Dominican men extradited to the U.S. for allegedly operating elder fraud scheme. Well, I'm kind of in that category of an elder person right now, getting up there in years, so that's of interest to me. Here's another one. Colombian national sentenced to over 7 years in prison for participation an international money laundering conspiracy. Another one, former local music teacher and Filipino man charged with sexually exploiting and sex trafficking children. And yet the left-wingers say, oh, these are just fine, upstanding citizens. Well, maybe not citizens, but fine, upstanding people. Not all of them. Another one, Dominican national pleads guilty to fentanyl trafficking. Still another, Brazilian national sentenced for selling firearms without any license and conspiracy. And we could go on and on. There are several more of these. This appeared on November 16th, as I said, in the Boston Herald. If you want to see Howie Carr's article, they're usually very witty. And if you can get to a copy of the Boston Herald, you can see that. November 16th. What else do we have here? Big Apple Gun Surge. This is by Dory Lewak, L-E-W-A-K, in the New York Post, November 16th. It says, they're preparing for a Mamdani administration LOX. Now, this is a play on words, LOX, L-O-X, dock and barrel. Jewish New Yorkers are arming themselves before an anti-Israel, quote, mayor who despises us, unquote, takes the helm of New York City, several told the Post this week. Michael Bergita, who opened a gun shop in Marine Park, Brooklyn, called Samson Armory, a nod to the biblical Israelite warrior and symbol of sheer strength, said his new business is booming. Bergita 30 is arming everyone, from fearful Zaydes, I'm not even sure how you say this, C-A-Y-D-E-S, to terrified rabbis. And here's a quote, we're probably the only gun store to have a minion. Again, not being Jewish, I'm not quite sure what that is. But anyway, it said the 30-year-old Orthodox owner about the Jewish gathering for prayer. And who can blame them? Bergita said he foresees chaos under the incoming radical socialist mayor. And here's a quote also by Mr. Bergita. The NYPD is all retiring. We have to fight it for ourselves. People are freaking out over Mamdani. Anyone who has any Christian Judeo values, Bergita claimed, adding that he largely works with the Jewish community, who are tougher than Bubba's brisket. And he adds, we have to let everyone know, don't F blank blank K with the Jews, Bergita said, claiming that the majority of those with licenses in New York are members of the tribe. Never again. Well, there's a great deal more to this article. It's a good one. New York Post, November 16th. Big Apple gun search. A couple other good things that our intrepid Massachusetts guy said. Let's see now. Here's one about Chuck Schumer's shutdown, government shutdown, that collapsed. This is by Michael Goodwin, also New York Post. Says the collapse of Chuck Schumer's shutdown gambit when seven fellow Democrats and one independent broke ranks with him serves as a humiliating bookend to the longest government closure ever. It also simultaneously highlights one of President Trump's most sweeping and crucial Washington victories over his most toxic opponents. And it goes on to describe that, but you get the general idea. Again, New York Post by Michael Goodwin, and the date was November 12th. Here's an interesting one. Up to New York Post, November 13th. Media cover-up. Washington Post calls out Zoe's dark side after he won. Now they tell us. Maybe I should say, now it can be told. In an editorial Sunday, the Washington Post informs us that New York City mayor-elect Zoran Mamdani is a dictatorial ideologue. He ran an upbeat campaign with a nice guy demeanor and perpetual smile, papering over a long history of devices and demagogic statements. And I guess that's a quote. It's in quotation marks. I guess that's from the Washington Post. And now this is no longer part of the quote. This might have fooled voters into thinking he was a feel-good technocrat who'd fix the city. But after being elected, the mask came off. And here's a quote. Across 23 angry minutes laced with identity politics and seething with resentment, the editorial says, Mamdani made clear that he wants to identify bias enemies like landlords and bosses who exploit workers and set about crushing them. His goal, he knows, isn't to increase wealth, but to redistribute it to his supporters. He didn't mention growth once. Well, again, that's a good article. You can find that in the New York Post. I'm sure they have some form of archives. On November 13th, it was, by the way, by Glenn Harlan Reynolds. One or two more articles. Here's one about Portland. We hear a lot about Portland being a woke city, a far left-wing city. This one is called Bias Remorse in Portland, Socialism Backlash. This is by Charles Gasparino. Once again, the New York Post, Friday, November 14th. If the travails of a certain left coast city are any guide, Zoran Mamdani, or Mamdani's plan to paint New York red, is not only bound to fail, but also to alienate voters once they get a real taste of his socialist, quote-unquote, utopia. The mayor-elect wants to hand out everything from frozen tents and free buses to subsidized trans surgeries, even for kids. He wants the so-called 1% of wealthy New Yorkers who already paid for most of the freebies to pay for even more. That message won him the mayoralty, but what he left out of his pitch is what happens next. And the article goes on to describe Portland. It says, take Oregon, its largest city, Portland, has embraced various forms of socialism. The same stuff spouted by our mayor-elect for New York. It has also been a poster child of urban decay, a smoldering mess of crime, businesses fleeing, and homeless people. Now, people have had enough. According to the survey conducted by Public Opinion Strategies, financed by the pro-business advocacy group, Save Our Cities, here are the results. 67% say Oregon's economy is, quote, pretty seriously off track because of momentous taxes, regulations, and homelessness. Independents are the largest voting bloc, and 73% believe the state is on the wrong track. And it goes on to say that Portland is the epicenter for the social justice woke movements. And it has a photograph here. It shows the street in Portland. And it says, scenes like this in socialism embracing Portland, Oregon, could be a preview of New York City's near future. And they show some homeless tents, dirty sidewalk, graffiti on the walls. Not the kind of place you might want to go shopping in. Well, there's a few of those good articles that a listener in Massachusetts sent. I'll give you some more of those next time. Now, let's see what we have from the Internet. The stunning rise of anti-Semitism in America's churches. This is an alarming one. This is in the Washington Times, Sunday, November 23rd. It is absolutely stunning that tens of thousands, if not millions, of conservative Christians in the ranks of America's evangelical church are apparently shameless anti-Semites. A case in point is the shocking number of people who are now arguing that if you believe God's eternal promise to Abraham is still valid, you are a, quote, dispensational heretic, unquote, who thinks Jews are somehow saved apart from faith in Christ. Well, should we respond to this? Or how should we respond to this? Well, by calling it what it is, utter nonsense. Well, I'm not going to get into the theological side of this, but it is a good article for those of you that had the time to read it. Washington Times, Sunday, November 23rd, and again, if you are interested, you can check it out on the Washington Times. Now, let's see. Here's another article talking about that videotape that basically advises soldiers to disobey. This is from the Gateway Pundit by Christina Layla, November 24th, 2025. Mark Kelly issues defiant response after Department of War opens misconduct probe. Democrat Senator Mark Kelly from Arizona released a statement after the Department of War launched a review of allegations of misconduct after he urged members of the military to defy President Trump's orders. Without offering any specifics, Senators Alyssa Slotkin, Democrat of Missouri, Michigan, and Mark Kelly, Democrat of Arizona, along with Democrat representatives Maggie Goodlander from New Hampshire, Jason Crow, Colorado, Cliff DeLuzio, Pennsylvania, and Chrissy Houlihan, Pennsylvania, repeatedly stated, quote, you can refuse illegal orders, unquote, or you must refuse illegal orders, in a viral video. And here's another quote. The Department of War has received serious allegations of misconduct against Captain Mark Kelly, United States Navy retired, in accordance with the Uniform Code of Military Justice, 10 U.S.C., paragraph 688, and other applicable regulations. A thorough review of these allegations has been initiated to determine further actions, which may include recall to active duty or court-martial proceedings or administrative measures. This matter will be handled in compliance with military law, ensuring due process and impartiality. Further, official comments will be limited to preserve the integrity of the proceedings. And those are the words of the Pentagon. The Pentagon also said the Department of War reminds all individuals that military retirees remain subject to the UCMJ, that's the Uniform Code of Military Justice, for applicable offenses, and federal laws such as 18 U.S.C. number 2387 prohibit actions intended to interfere with the loyalty, morale, or good order and discipline of the armed forces. Any violations will be addressed through appropriate legal channels, the Pentagon added. Let me jump down a little bit. And Mark Kelly replied, he said he learned about the Department of War's probe on social media. He said he won't be intimidated. Kelly said, quote, if this is meant to intimidate me and other members of Congress from doing our jobs and holding the administration accountable, it won't work. And they give a full statement from Kelly. So we'll see what pans out. Kelly is defiant, but seems to me that they are undermining the military. They're accusing Trump of things he hasn't done. They're lying about it, in essence. And as the earlier article said earlier in the show, the lady from Michigan, couldn't even come up with a single instance in which Donald Trump had issued an illegal order. Not even one. And yet, She's shooting off her mouth about this whole matter, as are these others. All Democrats, you notice. Well, all right. And then we have crime in Chicago from the Washington Times. And that preceding one was from the Gateway Pundit on November 24th. This one's from the Washington Times on November 23rd. Trump says Chicago residents begging for crime help after a violent weekend. President Trump, this is by Matt Delaney, by the way, Washington Times, the November 23rd. President Trump says Chicagoans are clamoring for federal law enforcement assistance with shouts of bring in Trump after two weekend shootings left one teen dead and several others wounded downtown. Mr. Trump reiterated his desire to crack down on crime in Chicago and called out, quote, massive crime and rioting, unquote, after seven teenagers were injured Friday in a shooting outside the Chicago theater. Less than an hour later, a 14-year-old boy was killed in a separate shooting, police said. And the president posted this on Saturday on Truth Social, quote, multiple police officers attacked and badly injured, 300 people rioting, six victims shot, one critical, one dead. In the meantime, Governor J.B. Pritzker and the low-IQ mayor of Chicago are refusing federal government help for a situation that could be quickly remedied. The people are chanting, bring in Trump, unquote. Police have not confirmed if any officers were injured in either of the shootings. Mr. Trump appeared to be taking cues from Alderman Brian Hopkins, the Second Ward Democrat, who posted about 300 juveniles rioting downtown and officers being assaulted with mace and stun guns. Mr. Hopkins said one officer had to be hospitalized. Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson said 18 people were arrested and five weapons recovered amid the violence. However, the Democratic mayor said none of the suspects was thought to be the trigger man or trigger men in the two shootings. And let's see, these are his words, Mayor Johnson. It is quite frankly frustrating and quite upsetting when this type of violence takes place because it does engender and evoke fear. So we will have a strong police presence. We'll have stronger control over how traffic flows, unquote. Crowds had gathered downtown for Chicago's official Christmas tree lighting ceremony Friday when gunshots rang out around 9:50 p.m. Authorities said seven teens between 13 and 17 years old were hit by gunfire. All the teens were listed in good condition after suffering grazes or leg wounds. Police said another shooting took place five blocks away in Federal Plaza around 10:40 p.m. Officers arrived to find 14-year-old Armani Floyd suffering from multiple gunshot wounds. He died hours later at a hospital. And police said an 18-year-old man was also injured in the shooting and was rushed to a hospital in critical condition. Mr. Johnson, that is the mayor, said the violence stemmed in part from a planned, quote, teen takeover, unquote, that officials had gotten wind of days before. And the mayor said, quote, there was a communication that was delivered to Chicago public schools to encourage young people not to participate in these unauthorized gatherings, the mayor said. We had 700 additional officers on top of the first police district present. We had community violence interrupter workers that were out there as well. And let me go down a little bit here. Mr. Trump has been angling to send National Guard troops into Chicago, into Chicago to assist with Operation Midway Blitz, the federal government's crime and immigration crackdown in the city. But a federal judge has blocked Mr. Trump's attempt to deploy some 500 members of the Texas and Illinois National Guard into Chicago. And just jumping down a little bit. Well, I guess those are pretty much the main gist of that article. And we hear about crime all over the place, especially in these big cities. Well, they don't seem to do much about it. Now, from WorldNet Daily, there was an article and an accompanying videotape that you can watch if you go to the website, worldnetdaily.com. And it says, Kash Patel goes in depth about motives of attempted Trump assassin. This is by Anthony Makey, M-A-K-I, Daily Caller News Foundation, November 23rd, 2025. FBI Director Kash Patel told investigative journalist Catherine Parrish that hatred for the U.S. government and the two-party system played a role in Thomas Matthew Crook's attempt to assassinate President Donald Trump on July 13th, 2024, in Butler, Pennsylvania. Parrish asked Patel what motivated Crooks, age 20, to try to kill Trump, then the presumptive Republican presidential nominee. Patel's answer appeared to depart from previous FBI statements when Bureau officials said they were unable to find the motive or ideology behind the assassination attempt. The FBI director, appearing on Herridge's show, the show's name is Straight to the Point, by the Los Angeles Times Media Group, told her that Trump was satisfied, that's in quotes, was satisfied with his agency's investigation into that fateful day. Patel stopped short of saying the case was closed. And this is a quote from FBI Director Patel. He, Crooks, as has been publicized, had a basically hateful relationship with the United States government, talked disparagingly about both political parties, to include President Trump, and talked about the need to take matters into his own hands. And, unfortunately, that's just what he did. And Patel said that when Herridge asked about Crook's motive. And that has been mysterious. I had some information from the New York Post, I think it was last week. Never quite finished that. I'll try to get back to that next week. And let's see. Patel was later asked if Trump was satisfied with the FBI's findings regarding the assassination attempt. He emphatically responded, yes. And Herridge asked Patel, is the Thomas Crooks case a closed case? And Mr. Patel responded, how we treat cases like this with such great public importance is we put them in a pending slash inactive status. So if there's new information that comes in, we can receive it and react to it. And we don't want to foreclose that possibility, the FBI director said. When we came in, our job was to both treat the president as a president, let me see if I can make some sense out of this. It doesn't read quite right. I guess it's trying to say, when we came in, this is Kash Patel speaking, our job was to both treat the president as the president of the United States and as a victim, and remind the American public that there were three other victims, and tragically, one person even lost his life, Patel said, referring to the rape, Corey Comparatore, a volunteer firefighter and attendee at the Trump rally in Butler, who died shielding his wife and daughters from Crook's gunfire. Well, we're getting near the end of the program. Let me jump down a little bit here, see if there's anything else. Days after the Pennsylvania assassination attempt, outlets reported that U.S. authorities received intelligence regarding a reported Iranian plot to kill Trump. No connection between this alleged plot and Crook's attempt was ever found. In November 2024, the Department of Justice charged three people in connection with the alleged Iranian conspiracy to assassinate Trump. Well, that seems to be the way it stands at this present time. doesn't really give you too much information to go by, and it really doesn't in any way give you any concrete information about Crooks, the alleged attempted assassin and murderer of the fireman. Well, our time is just about up. We had two major events coming about this week. Saturday was the 62nd anniversary of the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. And because it's been a long time ago, a lot of us are still living who were old enough to remember it, but a great many people were born soon after that, or maybe long after that, and have no memory. It's just a historical event. But the repercussions remain to this day, and the mystery surrounding Mr. Kennedy's death is still there. I would have to say, having read a great deal about it, I'm certainly not a great authority on it, but as an educated layman, it does seem that the true story has never been officially acknowledged. A great many people have had hypotheses, but what really happened, we don't know. And on a happier note, just 2 days from now, as I record this, it will be Thanksgiving. I think we all have a lot to be thankful for in this great country. It's not perfect, but it's probably the best large country there is in the whole world. And I've never had any feelings that I wish to have lived in any other country. So, give thanks to God and to your fellow Americans and fellow citizens of the world for all that you have. And we pray that you will have many blessings in the years to come. So, tune in again next week. If you want to write to me, it's Lou Caverly, D-A-V-E-R-L-Y, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Thanks for listening. Tune in again next week, and have a great Thanksgiving. Good night.